It's the 7th of March. I apologize profusely for being absent. I hate missing a class. It throws our schedule off, especially this class, which we'll talk about later on. But more importantly, I mean, you know, if I don't show up, that's a missed opportunity for you. But, you know, I just do my best to come to class no matter how sick I am. Well, I couldn't come, no bad. And so you might see me coughing and stuff. I apologize. But then you see that little sign up saying class canceled. Everybody goes, yay! Okay, I'll take a sick day. Hopefully my wife would have shot me. Yeah. So, what are we doing? Oh, well, we're continuing introduction to stocks and equities. We're hoping to get to slide 60. That's why I put that there. I mean, we've got to get to slide 60 at the very least. Maybe a little bit further. Make sure you have your Chapter 5 packets. Pull them out. We're going to need them. And Chapter 4 is due. Chapter 4 is overdue. Turn it in. Contact me if you're having problems. Yeah. Investment club today, those of you who are interested. So, we have a joke?
Oh.
Oh. I have plenty, don't worry. It's here. Yeah, so are the jokes, yes. I bought the world's worst thesaurus. You know what thesaurus is, right?
Yeah.
You look up other words, right? Synonyms and antonyms. Not only is it terrible, but it's terrible. So, okay, yes. I don't know if I should trust you anymore. Pass this back to Jonathan, please. Okay, so you guys are awesome. Look at you, up 10%. You guys are awesome. How's the investment club doing? They're doing pretty good. But again, look at that PG&E. Somebody made a gutsy call, and it worked out for them. But Investment Club's not doing too bad, 2%, you know. AMD is getting hammered. But stock untip of the week is FUV. One of the students in the online class is doing chapter 2. He's already turned in chapter 5. And you'll see in chapter 5 assignment, you'll see that there's a place for you to do some stocks on your own. Look up stocks on your own. He looked up FUV, F-U-V, which I said, okay, Archimoto? And I thought, I gotta look this thing up. Can you guess what F-U-V stands for? Fun Utility Vehicle. And look at the stock. Well, it was down 14% yesterday. But look at the earnings per share. Look at the market capitalization. 66 million microcap, verging on the penny stock, which we'll talk about different types of stocks eventually. Target estimate next year, $10. They're smoking something. This is the kind of stock that just gets you so excited. Look at this cool machine that you can put two people in. And it's electric, and it's awesome, and you can't buy it. You can buy it, yet, but you won't get it for many months because you're all pre-ordered. And you give a $5,000 non-refundable deposit, and they're based in Eugene, Oregon. So I said, I don't know how I give a verbal response to the online student. I don't know how engaged you are with this stock, in love with it, but remember, your $1,000 could easily turn into $20,000 or $30,000 if they make the big time. But that's a big if. More likely your $1,000 will become 50 cents. So I don't know. He hasn't responded back to me yet. So are you going to invest in FUV? Fun Utility Vehicle? Looks really fun and really dangerous. Okay. I don't think so. So let's continue from where we left off. My apologies again. Come on, sweetheart. Let's go. There we are. We had discussed trading costs, and we said that you're not necessarily going to get the best price, right? Especially if you're using Robinhood or one of the lower price places that give you very little, that charge you very little commissions. They got to make their money somehow, and so they're doing it with this order flow, this kickback. So the Securities and Exchange Commission says your broker has a duty to seek the best execution that is reasonably available to its customers' orders. But it's not a guarantee. The Securities and Exchange Commission requires brokers and dealers to notify their customers if their orders are not routed for best execution. And typically this disclosure is on the trade confirmation slip you receive or email after you place the order, which we saw on the previous slide. Determining whether or not a customer got the best execution can be very difficult. Here's an example of the Securities and Exchange Commission trying to enforce the rules and not doing a very good job. It's a case, of course, you know, law students have to study all these cases how they came out. And the SEC basically failed in showing that Scottrade was screwing their customers. Scottrade says, no, we're not screwing our customers. We told them that we're getting this kickback. We didn't use the word kickback. We used the word remuneration that nobody understands. But they got away with it. The Securities and Exchange Commission was looking into making the cost more transparent, possibly showing the customer the difference between the dealer's price, the best execution at the time of the transaction, maybe even gas, showing the total cost of the transaction from the markup and the markdown. Needless to say, the deep discount brokers were not happy about this. They said it would drive up the cost of commissions. Wait a minute. Why would it drive up the cost of commissions and ultimately hurt the consumer, and the proposal died? So it is up to you to check if you're getting the best execution. But how, I mean, the Securities and Exchange Commission can't even do it. How can you do it? And the best thing to do is just realize you're being charged extra. You know, understand that you're not getting that price, that's the best price that they say you are. And does it wind up costing you a ton of money? Well, okay, Nicholas here, Andrea Reyes, Ken Doy, did I already give you a check? Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, you're not getting the best price, but is it costing you a lot of money? No, unless you're the kind of person who's buying and selling and buying and selling, then you're getting hit with these commissions. You're getting hit with commissions, and it's hurting your total return. But, you know, it's part of the job, part of the deal here. And then if you really do believe that you're going to be able to beat these people at their game, buying and selling and buying and selling, look at this. Have you heard of high-frequency trading? HFT, high-frequency trading? Okay. Right now, it's gotten better, I'm sure, from their point of view. But the book Flash Boys, start reading. I know you guys don't like books, but do. I mean, you can download it to your phone, right? You don't have to hold the book in your hand. He's the same guy who did the Liar's Poker? He wrote Liar's Poker. He's a very good writer. And he wrote Flash Boys. And now, wait, the technology has gone way beyond this, I'm sure. But these companies use computers to transact large numbers of orders at very fast speeds, in the millisecond level. The computers are doing transactions far faster than a human can do. And there is little doubt that high-frequency trading has reduced transaction costs. But at the same time, they've been accused of using their ability to transact at the microsecond level to front-run investors. What does that mean? They see an order before it reaches the system. They are able to see that order. And then they're able to jump in front of you and make the transaction at a lower price and turn around and charge you at a higher price. Now, it's a tiny little bit of money. You know, we're talking, you know, thousands of pennies. But when there's billions of transactions every day, yeah. One firm, IEX, is fighting back. And he talks about the beginnings of IEX in the book, and then you have to follow along because the book was written in 2013 or so. So they've created what's called a speed bump. They've literally made technology so that when orders come in, they are grouped together and then they are sent into the world at the same time. The Securities and Exchange Commission approved it. They had some huge backers because the mutual fund companies, the pension funds, they weren't happy about this. They knew what was going on. And so American Funds, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity was involved, I think. The Texas Pension Fund, which is the second largest fund in the world after the California Pension Fund, they're involved. So we'll see how well it works. Other companies are sort of acting like, well, we'll get involved too. But at the same time, you got to look at the scale. These companies are probably, some people call it a tax. These companies are probably taking anywhere between 5 to $15 billion from us, all of us, every year, which sounds like a lot of money, right? It's a tiny percentage of the transactions that occur every day. It's a tiny amount of money with regard to the entire system. It's about the same amount of money. That's but the difference, $9, $10 billion. That's how much people bet on the March Madness NCAA tournaments, right? So I know it sounds like a lot of money. Of course, to one person, it is. To the entire system, it's a small amount. So I think the Securities and Exchange Commission is basically saying, look, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So these firms are just going to have this little extra tax upon all of us investors. But we'll see if IEX and other companies can fight back. Does that make any sense? And really, if this, you know, doing what you're, if you're doing the Chapter 5, we haven't talked about the Chapter 5 assignment, my apologies, it's due next Thursday. But if you're doing that, you're looking these things up, and if you're enjoying this, you definitely would enjoy what this book and what's going on in the technology of the transaction world. Okay. In the video we saw last week in our marketplace simulation, we worked in round lots. And technology has basically made this distinction not meaningful. But it used to be you were encouraged to buy 100 share lots. One lot is 100 shares. Remember, he said a two lot, a three lot, 200 shares, 100 shares. Anything less than 100 shares was called an odd lot. Still called an odd lot. And then if you had 100 shares and 117 shares, that was a mixed lot. And they used to charge you anywhere between 12.5 cents and 25 cents more for handling an odd lot. That was called the odd lot differential. And as such, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, they encouraged you, and it was in your best interest to buy in 100 share lots. But technology has made that, it's just not, you don't have to worry about it. You might be charged an extra nickel or, you know, a couple of pennies. And so on 80 shares, you're talking about an extra dollar or 80 cents or something like that. It really is not a big deal. So don't worry about this odd lot differential. But still, you have to know it. Understand? You have to be able to know it. At least to counter people who say, well, they tell me I should only buy 100 shares. And I can't buy 100 shares of Amazon. Amazon's selling for, $1,200 or $1,500. I'm like, that's $150. No, don't worry. Buy one share. You buy one share, it's okay. You're going to pay a little bit more than the people who are buying 100 shares, but not a big deal. So you got to memorize this, all right? Now, reading stock quotes. Different sources will contain some or all of most of these statistics, and we'll discuss this. We already looked at the bid and the ask. You're seeing the prices that are 15, 20 minutes old when you go on the internet or on your cell phone or whatever. And we'll discuss dividend yield, PE ratio, net change, year to date, all these other stuff, open, high, low, close. Come on, not that important last. But we're going to do that. That's going to be our assignment. So do you want to pull out the assignment? Okay. Let me get it on the screen. You don't have to. I'll put it up on the screen here. The stock market's assignment. And I know this is going to sound kind of bizarre, but I really do hope you get lost doing this assignment. Oh, no, that's not what I mean. Not in a nasty way. I want you to just have fun. Literally have fun. You're going to go in there, and if you use Yahoo, I'm going to show you Yahoo, MarketWatch, or you can use the library. And we'll see the stock symbol, where it's listed, the day, which, you know, the day you did the thing. Price, all these other things we'll talk about. This one we'll talk about later on because you're going to determine that. All these other things you look up, and then you're going to determine that. Okay? So let's use, we've been using Yahoo, so let's use Yahoo, which, you know, used to be, it used to be so good. So how do you get there? Well, let's go to the homepage real fast. You can type in finance.yahoo.com, or you go to the homepage and pick finance. And now what they've done, they call it Neo or something. What they've done is they've made it so that they're trying to get you to use their search engines. You know, you type the name of the company up here. Instead of giving you the quote page, the summary page, which is the quote page, which is the one we're interested in, it gives you like a Google search. They lost that battle a long time ago. And so it just pisses people off. Here's where you just put, you all knew that, where you're supposed to type it in here, the quote for the company. So I chose Southwest for a cute reason. Anybody know the symbol for Southwest Airlines? Love, right? Because they love to fly. And they started their existence at Love Field, L-O-V-E, in Dallas. Now, near Dallas, is it near Dallas? Somewhere in Texas. That's where they started, at Love Field. They love to fly. So you type Southwest Airlines and Yahoo and all the others. Yahoo sometimes takes a while for this thing to get working. Comes up and says, oh, we think you want Southwest Airlines. And there's the symbol. So you already know what the symbol is, right? And then it might be Southern Company, which is a very big utility. Kansas City Southern, which is a railroad. But, okay, and where is it? It's an equity. It's a stock, or you're supposed to know that. And where is it? New York Stock Exchange, right? So if we click on, you can also type, once you know the symbol, you can just type in the symbol. And you pick Love. And now here, we've already seen this page, right? We've already seen this page. But we're going to now start playing with it. It used to be so good, it's so horrible now, but it's still better than many of them. So here's where it tells you where it's exchange. What exchange it is, New York Stock Exchange. They say it's the real-time price, but I don't believe it. It's 15 minutes in the past. And so some of these things we're asking you to look up. We're asking you to look up the price, obviously. And where's the bid in the ask? Here's the bid in the ask we talked about last week, right? I don't think I asked you that. But right now, well, actually 15 minutes ago, there were 800 times 100, 80,000 shares, or 80,000 shares available for sale at $52.53. That's the best price. There are other higher prices. The best price you're going to get when you sell your shares as a retail investor is $52.51. And there are prices below this willing to buy it from you. Are you with me? That's the bid. I'm sorry, bid and the ask. And the ask is the higher one. And you can think of, if you have to ask how much the yacht is, it's too expensive. So it's more expensive. The market capitalization, we're going to do those calculations next week. How big is the company? Well, right now, if you wanted to buy Southwest Airlines, you need $29 billion in your pocket. You're going to walk on down to the New York Stock Exchange and say, I want to buy Southwest Airlines. And they go, no, it's not going to happen. Right? But other companies, when other companies buy other companies, they need to have at least that much. Actually, they need to have more. There's the P.E. ratio. We're going to discuss that in detail. Earnings per share. TTM stands for trailing 12 months. They're looking 12 months behind. There's the earnings date. We'll talk about the earnings calls. Forward dividend and yield. So that's 64 cents they're paying you for every share you have. They should put a dollar sign there, but they don't. It's 64 cents for every share you own. And that turns into a dividend yield, which we're going to do that calculation on Tuesday. $1.21%. So Sal, on your $52.60, right now you're getting 1.21%, which is more than what a lot of savings accounts are paying, right? But less than what most bonds are paying. Ex-dividend date, that's the date that if you own the shares, actually it's a little trickier than that, we'll talk about that later, but if you own the shares on March 5th, you're going to get this 64 cents divided by 4 because the United States companies pay every quarter. They don't pay you 64 cents at once. They pay it over 4 quarters. And then Yahoo has gone out and looked at all these analysts who think the average, they think next year Southwest is going to be $62. So they're excited about that. Cool? Now, there's a couple other things I ask you. I ask you what sector of the economy it is. Now, you don't have to look this up. You can. It's under profile. But what do you think? What would you put this sector, this economy? Transportation, airlines. I'll show you what it really is. They say it's in the industrials. That's stupid. That's stupid. It's not an industrial company. So this is why it used to be a good website. Really, I'm I actually sent a letter to the CEO of Verizon, because Verizon knows now Yahoo. Did I tell you this already? And I don't think he's going to read it, because I sent it to the CEO, and then some underling reads it and sends me back something. The next day, I forget his name, the CEO of Verizon, a multi-billion, $200 billion company, sent me an email. He said, I used to live right across the street from Southwestern College. And he was said, we're going to do our best to make it the best financial website out there. Yeah, thanks a lot, buddy. So you could put airlines. In fact, it used to be regional airlines, but they just call it airlines now. So that's very flexible, whatever you put there. Questions, thoughts? And then the stock type we'll discuss either Thursday or maybe next Tuesday or Thursday. So we'll discuss the stock type next week. You're going to choose what stock type it is. Cool? Now, you used to go pick up any newspaper, and they would have the quotes every day, but none of the newspapers, except for the Wall Street Journal and Investors Business Daily, they do that. They don't do that anymore because they know people don't look at the newspaper. Oh, my God. You mean you actually wait until the next day to find out how much your stock is worth? How 20th century. And people say, well, oh, boy, do you have your students read the Wall Street Journal? I said, no, I don't read it. Sometimes I do. When I'm at the library, I'll do it. I'm not going to pay for it. It's not as good as it used to be. It's now owned by Fox News, if you know anything about their integrity. But they do own Marketplace. MarketWatch. I forgot to show you MarketWatch. Another website that is actually not too bad, and I use it, is MarketWatch. It is owned by the Wall Street Journal, but it is very different from the Wall Street Journal. They've kept them fairly separate. Wall Street Journal also owns Barron's, which is a great thing you can read when you're in the library. If you want to get the darn subscription, go right ahead. But it's a little harder to use, not as easy to use. You click on this guy right here, and then you kick in the company or the, we know love. We know that the symbol for Southwest Airlines is love. And then they have very similar information, but just it's a little disjointed, not too great. There's the profile and earnings per share, yield, dividend. Remember, it was 64 cents? 64 cents on Yahoo? If you divide 64 by 4, you get 16. So they're showing you the quarterly dividend. Are you with me? Understand? So you have to be careful. You wish they would tell, say, quarterly and yearly or something. Don't. Yeah?
They'll usually say TTM.
TTM means trailing 12 months. Okay?
Website,
usually, yeah. And I think they have a key somewhere. But then they have the news articles, which are not bad. The articles are actually pretty good. So that's why I like MarketWatch. And then there's the profile. We'll talk about the financials, options. We'll discuss much of this as we go along. Think of it like an onion, folks. You're peeling away the layers. Another very popular website is Bloomberg, but I don't think it's that great. But the people who use it are usually professionals, and they pay extra because the Bloomberg they give you for free is not that great. Oh, by the way, Wall Street Journal's website is not free either. They want you to pay to use it. And then some people use Morningstar. And you've already been using Morningstar for mutual funds, some of you. You can also use them for stocks. So you play. Play, 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 play. So we just showed Yahoo. Google Finance is horrible. I don't know why they don't enter the competition. But when they went public back in 2004, they said, we are never going to have a good financial website. They basically said that. I don't know why. They, usually what think of Google Maps, right? They obliterated everybody else. But no, they're not interested. So please see the company. Okay, I show the online students. So there's a presentation. If you forget how to do what we just did today, go on the website and you'll see there's a presentation that basically does what we just did today. Okay, now. All right, so who turned in chapter 4 but didn't put their name on it and did really well? So if you didn't do your chapter 4 assignment, you can steal this one. Gabriel Sanchez here. Nicholas is here. Andrea Reyes. Okay. Well, somebody did not turn there. Would you pass this back to Andrea? Okay, who wants a wild button? Come and pick up a wild button. All right. How can we say? We've been dancing around these things all semester long as we're into week six. And finally, we are going to design this. We're going to, is that you? Okay, put your name on it, please. How can we say stocks have returned approximately 10% over the past 70 years or 100 years or 50 years or whatever? The industry uses market averages and market indexes. And they are benchmarks, standards, scales, rules that are used to measure the general behavior of securities prices by reflecting either an average price behavior, market average, or a relative price, relational price behavior, market index, of representative groups of securities at any given point in time. Now, we're not going to go into the subtle differences between market averages and market indexes. The book, if you have the book, if you're using the book, asks you to learn how to do these. And I told you, I don't care, because you're not going to ever do these calculations. They're always done for you, and you just look them up. But you cannot help but hear about these things every day. The Dow went down, the Nasdaq went up. What the hell are they talking about? Points. Things that you stick people in the eye with the point, anyway. What these things are just lists. They're just lists of stocks, which we've already touched on when we talked about index funds, because they match the index, right? An average is share price calculation. And there are a few averages that people use, not too many. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow being the most important one. The Dow Transport Index. And then the rest of them are all market indexes. These were considered better measures until they weren't. Because these take into account the market value, the capitalization, how big the company is. If you have an index of 500 stocks, the 500 largest stocks, the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500, the companies at the top are huge compared to the companies at the bottom. So the folks said, well, that doesn't make any sense to have them all have equal weight. What we're going to do is we're going to weight them. The companies with larger weights, the companies that are bigger, will have more oomph, will have more say in our index. The companies that are smaller will have less say. Are you with me? Understand? That's what a market index is. Whereas the market average doesn't care. The market average says whatever the prices went up and down, that's what we'll take an average. We don't care how big the company is. The larger the market share, the more influence the stock will have in the index. So let's take a look at the granddaddy of them all, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Charles Dow, who started Dow Jones, along with somebody else, I don't remember the guy's name. Dow Jones is the company that publishes the Wall Street Journal and Barron's. They are now owned by Fox and Rupert Murdoch, who's laughing all the way. He paid $5 billion for that company about, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. And the company was owned by a family, and most of them did not want to sell. And most people said, you know, Dow Jones is worth about $3 billion. Their empire is about $3 billion. And he offered five. And the people who didn't want to sell said, And the people who did want to sell, he's offering us $5 billion. Will you take the damn money? And so they did. So now it's owned by Fox. And they've definitely changed. You know, their reporting has changed, and they've spun off the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I think they still own the name, but now Standard & Poor's, the other company, their big competitor, runs the Dow Jones Industrial Average. It is usually called the Dow. It's what people say. The Dow went up. The Dow went down. The Dow J. The DJIA. It changes from time to time as company and industries involved. And as such, it has now more non-industrial stocks than industrial stocks. So why do they keep calling it the Dow Jones Industrial Average? I don't know. But it's made up of 30 high-quality stocks, typically the bluest of the blue chips, which we'll discuss next week when we get the types of stocks, selected for total market value and broad public ownership, and believed to reflect overall market activity. It uses price calculation. So that's why they're able to get away with price calculation, because they only have 30 stocks, and they do their best to get the biggest companies, the bluest of the blue chips, the most the very everyday household names. And so here they are, as of today, the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Can you name any industrial stocks in this list? Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Is that like another way of saying
profit? Profit. Well, blue chip company, but we're going to do this next week. Don't peek. Blue chip companies are companies that have their roots deep in the economy and are widely respected, many years of paying dividends, and yes, of course, they are very, very profitable until they aren't, and that's when they go out of business and get kicked out of the Dow. And so the Dow Jones Industrial Average, can you name any industrial companies in the Dow Jones Industrial Average? Look it up there. What do you see? Most of these companies you know, right? Don't peek. Did you peek already? Who's a peeker? You guys got enough back there? One more. Okay, right here. Everybody get one? Okay. Come on. Where's the industrial companies?
3M.
3M? Yeah, they're in they're a little strange. Any who's 3M? Post-it notes.
Chemicals.
Scotch tape. They make who?
Safety equipment.
They make mostly stuff that's flat, reflective tape, stuff that wraps around buildings. You know, this all that kind of stuff. They're Minnesota Mining and Materials. That was the original name, Minnesota Mining and Materials. So they're industrial. I guess you would say they're industrial because they make all these specialty products. But how about Boeing?
Is it industrial or is it defense?
Well, it's defense and commercial aircraft, but it's still industrial. They're making, you know, stuff. GE, which used to be in the Dow since it started, 1896, is gone. They kicked them out last year. But yeah, what industrials are there?
Caterpillar.
Exxon, Caterpillar, right, Caterpillar. What does Caterpillar make?
Industrial.
Right, they make tractors and bulldozers, earth-moving equipment. Okay, but all these, any other companies you don't know? Any other companies you don't know? Who's Pfizer and Merck?
Drug companies.
United Healthcare? Insurance, health insurance. United Technologies? Yeah, they make Otis elevators, Pratt and Whitney jet engines. I think they sold off Sikorsky, the helicopter company. I think they sold them off. I don't think they own them anymore. Who else do they own? They own, I forget, Tyco? Do they own Tyco? I'm not sure. Industrial products, stuff like that. But that's Honeywell, right? Honeywell is now another. Honeywell used to be in there. But now you got McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Disney, Microsoft, Nike, Walgreens, Boots. What the hell happened here? It's a long story. So, here's the deal. I'm going to give you $10,000 85 years ago. What is it, 84?
84.
The new one hasn't come out yet, darn it. I'm going to give you $10,000 84 years ago. And you decide who you're going to pick. Now, some of you already did this in Business 121, right? So you remember? So don't blurt it out. $10,000! Which company do you want? Now, was Nike around 10,000? I mean, 84 years ago? Was Walmart around? Okay. What happened? Look next to Walmart. Look next to Walmart. Who do you see?
Woolworth.
Who are they? Woolworth. That used to be the Walmart of the day, right? Your father would take you down and you'd test out the tubes for the television set or the radio. And then they had little turtles for sale and goldfish and little ducks that the kids would kill within a few days. And it was a soda fountain and you got your underwear there. And they're gone. Well, not really. Woolworth is still around. Anybody to Mexico? No, they're in Mexico. Woolworth is still in Mexico. It's like a small Target, depending on which city you're in. They're in TJ now. Morelia, Puerto Vallarta, Nowhere else I've seen them. But in the United States, it's Foot Locker. That's what's left of Woolworth in the United States. So from time to time, they kick one company out, put another company in. So if you picked Walmart, you basically had Woolworths 84 years ago until 1997, I think, when they got rid of them. So who do you want? And if you know this already, don't blurt it out. Who do you want?
Can we split it?
No, just do one at a time. Take too much time. Okay, who do you want? Who? Microsoft. Oops, I got to do it over here. Microsoft. Okay. Who did they kick out? Union Carbide, I think, right? Who else?
ExxonMobil.
ExxonMobil. And you can pick it. If somebody picks one, you can pick it also. Disney. Procter & Gamble. Who are they?
Anything.
Tide, Head & Shoulders, Pampers, Charmin, Crest Toothpaste, Gillette Razors. Yeah, consumer staples. Yes.
Goldman Sachs.
Government Sachs. Goldman Sachs. What do they do? What does Goldman Sachs do? But not the banking that we're used to. They do investment banking, which means when a company wants to go public, they go to Goldman Sachs or Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stupid, and they say, we'd like to go public. Oh, we'll be happy to help you. And bend over, because here it comes again. Yeah, they make a lot of money, folks. And as Lloyd Blankfield says, the CEO, we do God's work. Wrong, he hasn't read the Bible. This is Caesar, you know. God's work, you render under Caesar that which is, this is Caesar, render God that which is God, that's not Caesar. Okay, that's not God. Okay, who else? What else? It's not real money yet. American Excuse. Express. Excel. Excess. American Express. What do they do? Credit cards, yeah. They do a lot of services, yes. Mickey D. There was a while back, I forget how long this was ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, that they were saying, well, we should consider McDonald's an industrial company because they make things. Hamburgers. Okay, fine. Lauren. Jennifer. Ms. Lauren.
Intel.
Intel inside and outside. Yes. Visa. Squeeze you. Where do we put Visa? Squeeze you. There's an interesting case study that you people are into businesses. Visa was held by many banks. It was actually started by Bank of America many years ago, but the banks got together and held Visa. Until the Great Recession and the banks needed money, they then spun Visa off and it gave them a bunch of cash, because what a cash cow Visa is. Okay, what else? Who else? How about it there? Leo, did you already pick your picker? Did you pick already? Who do you want? Pfizer. What does Pfizer make? Drugs. Viagra. Viagra joke. Did you hear that there was a shipment of Viagra stolen? A shipment of Viagra stolen. The police are looking for a gang of hardened criminals. Joke. Okay. How about it there? Come on, because we got to get through this. Home Depot. Who'd they kick out? I forget. Sears, I think? They kicked out Sears, right? Boeing. What does Boeing make? Airplanes, right? Big planes. If you order a Boeing airplane now, you'll get it in 10 years. 10 years. That's how backlogged they are. Yes? Johnson, what does Johnson & Johnson make? Yeah, health products, Band-Aids, Q-tips, baby powder, baby oil, and the talcum powder that supposedly had asbestos in it or something. I don't know. I don't follow it. Stents, they make medical things, bubbles that go inside your heart valves. And they're like, yes, who else? Who has it said? Yes.
IBM,
in their international business machines. They're trying to change into a services company. They have some of the best technologies in the world, but people don't buy mainframes anymore, which are big, big computers, which is not really big anymore. They're so small. Okay, did we get you yet? Who you want? Coca-Cola! Fizzy sugar water with a brown crayon stuck in it that people all around the world drink. Who else? Who hasn't? Exxon. Okay, two for Exxon. Anybody? Did I get you yet, Kyle? It's not real money. Don't worry. Intel. Two for Intel. Okay, over here. Come on, we got to get this done. You understand this? What do you mean? What's going on? We're choosing which one you want. I'm going to give you $10,000 84 years ago. And you get to pick one. You picked two already? Okay. You're not supposed to vote twice. Thomas. Oh, you already did. So who hasn't voted yet? Raise your hands. Come on. So vote. Quick. What?
Nike.
Nike. Do people like Nike products? Yes. Who else? Hasn't voted yet? Come on. Ramel. Nike. Two for Nike. Three for Nike. Apple. Two for Goldman Sachs now? Two for Goldman Sachs? Who has another? Michael?
Exxon again.
Everybody vote?
JP Morgan Chase.
Where the hell are they? I don't know. I'm going to put them up here, but I don't think they are. Okay, and Coca-Cola. Two for Coke. Everybody vote? Two for Procter & Gamble. Did you vote already?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, poll it open. How'd you do? Not bad, huh? Who picked Procter & Gamble? Yeah. Boring is good, folks. You know, you think you got to go out and buy this hot tech stock and take it over to wrong. Buy companies that make stuff that people need every day. 2 billion men shave every day. I have a hard time believing it. I hate shaving. Right? Everybody wants to have diapers for their kids, right? Who else did really well? Exxon. Who else?
Home Depot.
Boeing did pretty well, right? I don't remember. Who's at the bottom of the list?
Cisco.
What do they make?
All sorts of IT equipment.
IT, you know, internet equipment. It's routers, switches, transmission devices. But was it really Cisco's fault? Who did they replace? Who is right next to Cisco? Yeah. Dow Jones didn't wait. They waited until GM was in bankruptcy before they finally removed them from the Dow and put in Cisco. So it wasn't Cisco's fault. It was the fact that GM basically became bankrupt. Same thing happened to AIG. Who did AIG get replaced by? I got they replaced by a few different people. So you have to, I think it was AT&T, and then you got to find, where are they? Oh, I can't find them, but Verizon, is it? Yeah, right. No. Who was it? Sorry. United Healthcare, right. But then what happened is they replaced AIG with Kraft, and then Kraft split, and then they got rid of AIG, and they put United Healthcare in there. So a lot of it is not the fault of the company that's there. Can stocks make us wealthy? This doesn't include dividends. This does not include dividends. We didn't include dividends. Can stocks make us wealthy? Can stocks make us sad?
Yeah.
Oh, well. This is what you're up against. So when you hear that the Dow went up 100 points, forget the word points. Listen to the percentage. That's what's important. The share price calculation of all these 30 companies, when aggregated, went up 100 points. But it's so bizarre now, because it's been around for over 120 years, that one company doing really well can really raise the Dow Jones average. One company doing really poorly can lower it very much. But it's just not typical. These are companies that normally don't disappear, but some of them have, like Kodak, like AIG. The GM, that's the old GM, is gone. That company's gone. This one, I don't listen to that much. I'm not that interested in it, but you're going to hear it every day. But we consider it, the bellwether. the big bluest of the blue chips. They also have the Dow Jones Transport Average, and many people look at this as a leading indicator for the economy. Because before the stuff gets sold, it's got to be made, so the basic materials have to be transported to where it's made, and then it's got to be transported to where it's sold. So people will look at the transport index, the transport average, I'm sorry, the Dow Jones Transport Average, as a leading indicator. But the problem is only 20 companies, and one of them doing poorly. Like, for example, everyone's worried about FedEx and UPS now because Amazon is going to develop their own transport system, it seems like. We don't know. It looks like they are. But I think it's overblown. That doesn't mean FedEx and UPS are going away. These are worldwide companies, and their roots deep in the economy. I mean, I'm sure Amazon, because they're not stupid. They're going to take a piece of their pie, but they're not going to go away. And then the utilities average, that was a lot more important many years ago when utilities were so important. But utilities, they're not going anywhere. They're important in many people's portfolios, but most people don't look at this. You take those three together and you get the Dow Jones 65 stock composite average. You won't hear too much about this. But these two are actually kind of important, and we've already touched on them. It used to be called the Wilshire 5000. Then, I don't know, Dow Jones made some kind of deal, kind of bought, but didn't really, Wilshire. Wilshire was another company based in L.A., Wilshire Boulevard, right? And they made a list of 5,000 companies. So you had the big companies, the medium-sized companies, and the small companies. And so now they called it the Dow Jones Wilshire 5000, total market index, and then they kicked Wilshire out, and now they call it Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. Isn't it easier to just say Wilshire 5000? Or maybe Dow Jones 5000? I didn't make this up, all right? I mean, it's not my fault. But you got to know this one. The ones, in fact, why don't you get your thing out. Shouldn't have said that. Get your packet out for chapter. Chapter. I apologize, folks. And what we're interested in is, where did it go? Worksheet number one. Get worksheet number one. These are the ones on this guy right here are the ones that we want you to know. We're going to do this after we get through this. As we get through this, we're going to do this worksheet. So you'll see, when you see one of them that's on the worksheet, those are the ones we want you to memorize. So we want you to memorize these two. Then what Wilshire did is very sharp. What they did is they took their 5,000 and they got rid of the top 500. In other words, the S&P 500. They got rid of the top 500 companies, which are the very large companies. So now when you want to see how small and medium-sized companies are doing, you can look at the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index. It used to be called the Wilshire 4500. Now, does this look familiar? Those of you who did the Chapter 4 assignment, what is this? Remember the S fund? This is the index that the S fund uses in the TSP, in the Thrift Savings Plan. If you haven't done Chapter 4 assignment, please do it. Please submit it, because if you don't do these assignments, it's like taking car lessons without getting inside a car and driving. All right, you've got to do the assignments, because we want you to do the research. So these two you want to know. Even though the names are horrible, you just have to be able to recognize them. And if you can just come up with Wilshire 5000 and Wilshire 4500, I am happy. That's what I call them. I can't remember Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index and Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index. And then the Internet Index, which was a real famous index that came out at the end of the 1990s and promptly lost 96% of its value. So much for the infernal net. Now, finally, from the beginning of the semester, we have been... Okay, so we got the Dow Jones... I'm just going to call it the Wilshire 5000 and the Wilshire 4500. So we want you to remember these guys. Finally, S&P 500. Bump, Standard & Poor's. Standard & Poor's is a company that was they've been around for a long time. They used to be part of McGraw-Hill, but they spun off and now they're a separate company. They're very important. Why? Because they keep a list of 500 largest companies traditionally based in the United States. But some of them now are based outside the United States, and there's a couple reasons for that. It's a very popular index, although, in my humble opinion, it's lost some of its original focus. It's used by many, many index funds. In fact, it's now the perfect investment. You don't have to worry about anything. Just invest in the S&P 500. There's nothing that can go wrong. Who did the diversification bonus assignment, which I forgot to tell you about last week? A couple people did. In Chapter 4, there's a diversification bonus assignment worth 2 points. It's for fun. Do it. I'll give you 2 points. Yippee. But the problem is that it's market-weighted. That was originally the selling point of this thing. Hey, it's market-weighted. It's better than the Dow Jones average because bigger companies have more sway. But that turned out to be its Achilles heel. Because what's happened now is that the companies at the top have become so large that they make up far more of the index than the companies at the bottom. So you think you're investing in a really well-diversified 500 companies, and the top 10 are worth 20%. 10 companies out of 500 are worth one-fifth of the value of the S&P 500. The top 50 companies are worth 50% approximately of the market index. So are you really diversified? In my humble opinion, I don't think so. And this is why I get really toasted when I tell people this, because they've all, if you read the news, read the financial media, the Standard & Poor's 500, oh, it's the perfect investment, low fees, broad diversification across the entire United States economy. They're wrong. And you hear Warren Buffett saying, oh, yeah, invest in the S&P 500. He is a shark. Don't let that grandfatherly figure giving you good advice, your granddad would go, he's good. Wrong. He knows what's going to happen. He knows that people are going to blindly put money in the S&P 500, and then when those top 10 companies, for whatever reason, start falling, this thing's going to crater. And what are people going to do? They're going to panic. Is it too late to get out? And then after it crashes, Mr. Buffett's going to walk in and start buying shares. Thanks, everybody. Okay. In 1998, 10% of the gain in the S&P 500 was due to just one stock, Microsoft. And this is what's happening now. Amazon and Alphabet, Google, and Apple have so much sway over the S&P 500 that if that next iPhone doesn't, everybody starts saying, I'm never going to tell. Well, it's already happening in China. People are staying away from the Apple because of the trade tensions are going on. And then S&P has dozens of other indices. Industrial 400, the mid-cap 400, the small cap 600. You add the 500, the mid-cap, and the small cap, and you get the 1500 index. Transportation, utilities, financials, globals, international, sector indices. So you can go to their website and look at all the different indices. The only one you have to remember is the S&P 500. Now, New York Stock Exchange, the Amex, now called the MICIT. I think they changed the name again. I got to do some more research. The NASDAQ, this is a very popular one. Because remember, the NASDAQ is where most of the technology companies are. And so we look to the NASDAQ index for how the tech sector is doing. Although there are many companies on there that are not technology companies like Costco and Starbucks. But most of the tech companies, Apple, Google, Facebook, Titter's on the New York Stock Exchange. And then the NASDAQ 100, which is the top 109 financial firms. You won't hear too much about this one. But this is the one you're going to hear mostly about, the NASDAQ. It went from 800 in 1995 to 5,000 in the year 2000. And everybody said, blue skies, technology is going to take over the world. There's not going to be any grocery stores anymore. And just invest in tech. And it fell to 1,200, 80% drop over 2.5 years. But now we're at around 7,000, right? It's come back very strongly. And then we already discussed the Wilshire 5,000, the Wilshire 4,500. These things are very important. because they often are used in indexes. And then MSCI and S&P, they have their own versions. I wish they would just use Wilshire 4500 and Wilshire 5000, but they won't. So you have to remember that it's the total stock market index, that's the 5000. The completion, or sometimes called the extended, is the 4500. And all you don't have to come up with those names. All you have to be able to do is identify them if you see them on a sheet of paper. Now, the next few, what did I do? Right, I forgot to write down the names. I'm putting the ones on there that I want you to memorize. NASDAQ. The next ones are also important. The Russell 2000 is made up by a company called Frank Russell Associates, and they have their Russell 1000, the top largest companies, 1,000, 3,000, the top 3,000 companies, and then they kick out the top 1,000, and you're left with the top, with the 1,001 down to 3,000, and that's the Russell 2000, and that's another popular index for small and mid-sized companies, small and medium-sized companies. So that's what they'll often say. Look at what happened. But people don't watch the Russell. So I do. I like to watch the Russell. But it shows you what's happening with small and medium-sized companies. But what, these are all United States. All these are United States. So how do we measure how we're doing outside the United States? Well, you might have heard of American Funds. They're one of the ones I really like. It's actually called Capital. The name of the company is Capital Group. But they call themselves Capital. Nobody else does. Everybody else calls them American Funds. And so they were investing outside the United States since the 50s. They're not the only ones. T. Rowe Price, Templeton, and then Templeton got bought by Franklin. So these companies were investing outside the United States, but they didn't have a measurement. So Capital created their own division called Capital International to measure what's going on the outside of the United States. But then the 1980s rolls around, they go, this is not really smart. We're going to destroy our own credibility. If we are measuring ourselves, that's not a good idea, right? It's not a good idea for you to, because if you all measured yourself in the class, how many would get A's? Raise your hands. If you gave your own grade, how many would you get A's? The rest of you are liars, right? So maybe not. I'll give myself a B. Okay, I didn't do a damn thing, but I'll give myself a B. So what they did is spun it off. So they kept the name. So MSCI, and you don't have to remember this, but now it's run by Morgan Stanley. Morgan Stanley Capital International. And these two were the benchmarks for many years. The World Index and the MSCI IFA. And that's how it was pronounced. World was global, todo el mundo, and the IFA was international. And literally what it stood for, do I have it down here? Yeah. Europe, I didn't write it down, but it stood for Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So it had Canada in it. It had Western Europe, old Europe that some people called, and then Australia, of course, and then Hong Kong, Singapore, Japan. There's a couple other companies. I think South Africa was in there for a while. I'm not sure. And what they didn't do, though, they never changed these guys. As the developing world, Eastern Europe, Latin America, Asia, right, and China, India, Russia, as these countries, emerging markets, started to develop, instead of just simply changing the World Index and the IFA, they've created two more indices. The MSCI All Country World Index, and sometimes it's abbreviated ACWI, and of course you remember that, right? ACWI, whatever the hell that stands for. And then the All Country World Index XUSA. Now somebody got paid a lot of money to come up with these dumb names, but I didn't do it. I wouldn't have thought, that's a dumb name. Maybe instead of world, call it Global Index. And then internet, I don't know. I didn't make up the name. But you got to remember them, okay? So are you ready now? Okay, let's now go to worksheet number one. So now, I should have you do it on your own. But take a few moments. Yes?
Do you have any extras?
Extras, yes, I do. I just got to find them, that's all. Okay, anybody need one? Okay. Gabriel Sanchez here. Okay, two that way and one that way, please. One that way. So take a couple of minutes now and match the, oh, one more. Okay, I'm sorry. You got to make yourself heard. Okay. Take about 2 minutes now and match the index with the, we actually should do this next Tuesday, right? So take, let's do it now. Okay, Gianni, no. Josie here? No. Raul Castro? I mean, Chavez? No. Raquel Dominguez is here. Neo? Okay. And Laura's here. Giovanna? No. And Guillermo is here. I thought I saw him. Guillermo? No, you're Joshua. Guillermo Mata? No. And Jonathan's here. Kyle's here. Nicholas is here. Andrea Reyes is here. Uriel? No. Susana? Come on. Do it. Do you have it? Do you have it? You already did it? Do it now. Don't wait for everybody else. Susana, Gabriel Sanchez, Oliver, Joshua's here. Alex Tomalia. Come on, don't waste your time. Don't waste our time. Let's do it. Everybody do it. We want you to study every single day. I know. I'd much rather be partying. But this stuff, you've got to know. Because if you don't know it, you can't speak the language with everybody else in the world. Who wants a wild button? Please take them. Okay. Get ready. Catch. Look out. Incoming. Who wants a wild button? Who wants a wild button? I'm going to go. No. And then you want one too?
Oh, yeah.
Get rid of this stuff. Okay, 30 seconds. Did you hear about the poor guy, Jeopardy guy? The Jeopardy guy. Alex Trebek. He got stage 4 pancreatic cancer. They go quickly. Usually. Not always. Steve Jobs lasted several years. But no, they usually go quickly. My sister-in-law's ex-husband, he was diagnosed early December, late November, gone mid-January, 6 weeks. Bad. Yeah, right, every day. Every day, thank you very much, Lord. Okay, you done? Who needs more time? Raise your hand. Hurry up. Take your time, but hurry a little. Hurry a lot. I think we lost Josie, huh? Maybe not. Okay, let's go over it. What's the market index designed to gauge the total United States stock market? Everyone? Yeah, somebody, everybody? Wilshire 5000, but that's not what it's called anymore. It's now called the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index. You don't have to be able to jump that out. If you just say Wilshire 5000, I'm a happy man. Okay, what's the stock market average made up of 30 high-quality stocks selected for total market value and broad public ownership believed to reflect overall United States market activity? It doesn't do it. That's the Dow. That's the granddaddy of them all, and it's 30 companies, so one company can really make the thing screw up. What's the market index designed to measure the stock markets of the world, excluding the United States? That's the, used to be called the EFA index, but now people don't use that anymore. They're now using the All Country World Index ex-USA, and you'll see it abbreviated ACWI. Okay, market index often used to measure the strength and weakness of medium-sized companies, small-sized companies based in the United States. Russell 2000, but you'll also see sometimes the Wilshire 4500, right? Traditionally, the largest 500 companies in the United States, that's the S&P 500. Market index campaign mostly comprised mainly of high-tech companies. NASDAQ. Everybody say NASDAQ. Which one is it?
NASDAQ.
If you say it, you'll learn better. I promise that. And then the global stock market, including the United States, global, todo el mundo. That was the world index, which is now being replaced by the ACWI, the All Country World Index. And the market is designated to measure the total United States stock market, excluding the largest 500 companies. Very popular with index funds. Used to be called the Wilshire 4500. Where did it go? But now it's Dow Jones U.S. Completion Total Stock Market Index, or Extended Stock Market Index. Okay, cool? All right, now, you hear in the news report in the evening that the Dow and the S&P each lost 2%, but the NASDAQ gained 1%, and the Russell 2000 was flat. What can you deduce from this report? Stocks are mostly unchanged? 1% or 2% change? Is that unchanged? No, it's 0.1% is mostly unchanged. Large company stocks gained, high-tech prices climbed, and small company prices were mostly unchanged? No, it's the opposite. Large company stocks, the Dow and the S&P being more indicative, lost ground. High-tech companies rose, and the small companies were mostly unchanged. It's C. And this says nothing about foreign stock prices. There's nothing in there about foreign stock prices. Okay, now, on your own, we don't want to use the time up, but look these guys up, McDonald's, Qualcomm, Coca-Cola, Butterfly. Butterfly? Have you heard of butterfly.com?
No.
Sure, they make blue steam, and it's going to be really, really popular. See, last year they made these left-handed smoke shifters, and they didn't work out too well. They're based in Dubuque, Iowa. Have you heard of Dubuque? You have. Have you heard of Dubuque, Iowa? And it's somebody's garage somewhere. Where would these be traded? Do you remember? Study the markets.
No.
The New York Stock Exchange?
No.
The NASDAQ?
No.
What are they called? They're called the pink sheets and the bulletin boards. Yeah, they would trade on the OTC, over-the-counter markets. So go back and look those up. We'll do those. And then the ETS, we'll talk about that. Well, don't do this now. We have to continue. We'll go back and remind me to go back to this on Tuesday. So let's get back to here. Because now, what we have to do is we have to realize that every single day, you are bombarded by images every day because they're going to want you to watch them. And don't go outside because it's dangerous out there. Watch Fox News and you will learn how horrible those Every day you're going to see a graph looks like this, right? Look at today's unstable stock market. It started off at 25 to 19, and then skyrocketed till noon, to 25 to 30, and then plummeted to 2 p.m. at 25 to 06, and then ended pretty much where it started at the beginning of the day. There's a wonderful book that was written in the 1950s called How to Lie with Statistics. I'm sorry, How to Lie with Statistics. And the numbers are way off, folks, because the world has changed quite a bit. But the concepts are still timeless. What is wrong with this graph?
Small scale.
The scale. It's called the scale on this side. They're showing you a little bitty scale of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Right? If we showed you the whole scale, this is what it would look like. Are you going to see this on the news? No, this is stock market index ennui. You know what ennui means? Ennui. Beyond boredom. It's a French word. Beyond. You're not going to see this on the news. And you're also not going to see this one. Do you remember the volatility graph we saw last week? Where we saw the S&P 500 start off at 10,000, then rocket up to almost 11, and then plummet to 9,000 something, and then bounce, and then at the end it kind of dropped much. But again, we only showed you this much of the graph. If we show you the whole graph, is it as scary as it was last week? No? I love this graph. I love this graph. Why? Because you can see people's faces go, ah, it's not so bad to lose 10%. It's not the end of the world. I mean, yeah. But are you going to see this on the news? No, you're not going to see this on the news. Cool. What a great class. Okay, so stretch everybody because we have a few minutes left and let's not waste the time because I missed today. I apologize. Because now we have some tedious. Okay, so you're going to memorize these, right? Memorize these indexes. On that study guide, the sheet we just did, the worksheet number one. We'll come back to the worksheet number one and get into worksheet number two next week. But now we're going to take a look at some of the more tedious yet important aspects of stocks spin-offs. Stock characteristics, the first one is a spin-off. What is a spin-off? Well, it's the conversion of one company, of one of the firm's subsidiaries, a part of the firm, to a standalone company by distributing stocks in that new company to existing shareholders. Sometimes the new company is still majority owned by the company that spun it off. So, have you heard the news, the big spin-off going on now? You retail fans, you shopping fans? Heard a new spinoff? The Gap. The Gap is going to be spinning off Old Navy. They're going to be separating the company into two parts. So the Gap owns Banana Republic. Who else? Tommy Bahama. They own Tommy Bahama? I don't know. And the Gap, right? And they have a couple more stores. But they also own Old Navy. And Old Navy is the only one that's growing. So they've been talking about this for a while. They're going to spin it off, and Old Navy is going to be its own company. Altria, Philip Morris, they spun off Kraft, but they still own a lot of the shares. They then spun off their international tobacco business, Philip Morris International, which is a different company, folks, but they still own a lot of shares, Altria. So if you look up Altria, that's the company that sells cigarettes in the United States. Philip Morris International sells the Marlboros, the Virginia Dims, outside the United States, but it's based in the United States, so figure that one out, right? It's the United States company, doesn't do any business in the United States. Where does it go? The history of spinoffs have been checkered. Some have done better than their companies. Others have just disappeared. You ever hear of Coca-Cola Enterprises? This was done back in the 90s. Coca-Cola mostly makes their money from the syrup that they make, that makes the soda. And they also had a bottling portion of the company. So what they did is they spun it off, and they called it Coca-Cola Enterprises. And they figured that that company could then compete with Coca-Cola, with other companies, you know, go to Pepsi, and hey, we'll do some of your bottling for you. And it didn't work out too well. So basically, eventually, I think what happened is Coke bought them back. Lucent Technologies, what a disaster that was. They were, some of you, if you don't remember this, but you might have heard of Bell Telephone, right? Ma Bell, AT&T. Well, they had two companies, Bell Labs, which was their product development company, and Western Electric that made the equipment. They actually made the equipment. Well, they spun that off, and that became Lucent Technologies. And it almost disappeared. Even though they built the best telephone equipment in the world, they made some very boneheaded maneuvers. So you'll find that this happens a lot more and more these days, that companies are spinning off parts of themselves to gain. Oh, you ever hear of a pizza crap, Kentucky Fried Rat, and Taco Smell?
Yeah, Yum Brands.
Yum Brands. Yum Brands. That's the name of the company. They used to be owned by Pepsi. Used to be owned by Pepsi. And Pepsi still owns a ton of the stock. And other people have been trying to Pepsi to spin off their their Frito-Lay, but they ain't going to do that. They're not giving up Frito-Lay. And then you might have heard of a stock split. A stock split. You don't see this as much. It still happens, but it's a maneuver. It's an accounting maneuver in which a company increases the number of shares outstanding by exchanging a specified number of new shares of stocks for each one. So, for example, the most popular is a 2-for-1 split. You had 100 shares. You now have 200 shares. Doesn't that sound exciting? I have 100 shares. Now I have 200 shares. What happened to the price? It also split, right? It went in half because there's no increase in value. So maybe you had one share at $20 and you now have two shares at $10. The value is the same. Now, why did they split? Well, it used to be because of technology. They didn't want the price to get so high that people couldn't be buying 100 share lots. But that's not, nobody cares about that anymore. They also now split, I think, when they're trying to tell the world, you know, we think things are pretty darn good. We think things are good. But they're not going to say things. They're not going to say, you know what, buy our shares right now. Because if it doesn't work out, they're going to get sued. So when companies announce a split, it's often a way, at least this happened when I was watching Qualcomm for a long time. Qualcomm announced a split, I forget, it was a long time ago, 10 years ago or something like that. And I said, you know what, I think Qualcomm's going to bop. I think they're saying, you know, things are great. And they were. It did really well. Now, remember, it's an accounting trick. Not a trick, it's a maneuver. And Warren Buffett wanted nothing to do with it. And he started his company, Berkshire Hathaway, in the 1960s. And he has refused to split his shares. He just said, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to play your game, Wall Street. A single share now goes for $320,000. But this is, if Coca-Cola never split, if McDonald's never split, if Exxon never split, that's how much a share would cost. Clorox, you know, companies have been around for 150 years.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing if they split?
Well, that's, you know, Laura says, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Again, it's a nothing. It's a not a thing because accounting-wise, nothing has changed. But I believe they're doing it to make people excited about the prospects. They're trying to say, you know what? We think it's cool. We think things are good. But there are reverse splits. There are 1-for-5 splits. What? You had 5 shares and now they give you 1 share? They take 4 away and give you 1? Why would they do that? They're trying to raise the price. With a stock split, when you split 2-for-1 or 3-for-2, the price is going to drop. But if you take 10 shares away and give them 1, or 5 shares away and give them 1, the price is going to go up by 5 or 10. And the reason they do that is because the price is going down to $1.50, 25 cents. So they reverse split to bring the price back up and tell the world, we are not going to go to the penny stock world. We're not going to go to the OTC. We're going to stay on the NASDAQ. We're going to stay on the New York Stock Exchange, because if your price gets that low, they want you out. Get out of here. Get out. We don't want you. It might not work. They might still kick you off. Yes?
So maybe I'm just buying into the hype here, but if you're splitting, okay, if they have to split, then that's putting more stocks out there so it can be traded more and more people can buy it. But then also, just conventionalism would say, if I had one stock at 20 and it splits to 10, and over time, it's going to gain and lose value and all that. But once it eventually, if it gets back to 20, since I now have 2, I've made more money now, correct?
Well, but it wouldn't have made any difference if it had gone from 20 to 40. You'd still double your money. You see the difference? It's just an accounting maneuver.
Okay.
You had 1 share at $20, and it now is 2 shares at $10. You still have $20 of value. Now, if the price doubles from 10 to 20, yeah, now you have $40 of value. But if the price had not split and the price went from 20 to 40, your value would still double. So it's an accounting maneuver. But as we said, I think there, it's a way for them to say, you know what? Hey, we think things are going well. Because the technological reasons disappeared. Odd lots are not a problem anymore. Cole? Okay, so I know you don't believe me, but you have to study. Really, you need to go over these things. Go to the library. You'll love it. You can take out the, you know, check the book. If you want to read the book, there are dozens of stuff available. Listen to these while you're commuting, while you're walking the dog. Do the worksheets. Do the assignments. Study every day. We want you to be the best stock pickers in the world, and there's a future for you in the industry. See you on Tuesday. Lauren Willen and the Creek Don't Rise.